Do you want me to apologize for this week's pick straight up?
Where music goes to die.
Wasn't we the starting greatest the podcast? Week, was it? Yeah, that is the start.
We starting the podcast. Should we start with friend of the podcast, Ace McWicket's trenchant commentary on your pick of the Shins?
Look, I never said that we're going
to
be.
I'm going to copper serve your shit for Bezo from this, but this is a fucking terrible album. I think was the. I might be paraphrasing lightly.
I never said it'd be good.
No, that to your credit, you never at any point said that you were going to enjoy either of these two albums.
No,
and that's entirely fair. What were the Shins trying to do with this album? I'm not that familiar with their back catalogue. What kind of stuff? I mean, I spent a bit of time listening to their most popular songs on Spotify. And it sounded like, acoustic pop kind of stuff.
Yeah, but they're
how far away from their sweet spot are we here with this?
Okay, so the problem I've got with this album is the Shins with his voice, sort of wistful, sad,
a little bit melancholy, but still
a bit melancholy.
Not even
that much upbeat. It's just that melancholy, wistfully sad. They go really well in sort of American indie
Zach Braff movies.
Yeah, Zach Braff or teen movies.
He uses
like
them
that.
Heavily. I understand he uses them like he's used them in Garden State, used them in Wish You Were Here.
Yeah. And like this album, for some fucking reason, they decided that musically they wanted to be all cheerfully and poppy, and it just didn't work.
This is sugary as fuck. That's cool. That's why I'm asking the question, because I'm like, this just feels like a sickly sweet sugary pop band.
Yeah,
it's it feels like something a marginal Finn brother worked on, or maybe one of the lesser Pet Shop Boys. There's a lot of kind of. It's sort of almost 8-bit 80s pop because there's a lot of bleep, blurp, blurp, bleep, blurp, bleep, blurp, bleep. There's some samples that I recognize from early 90s Amiga Pro Tracker stuff, particularly on Cherry Hearts. It's so fucking Amiga Pro Tracker, it's not funny. It's kind of a little bit OK Go. It's a little bit like that. King Gizzard album that was aping the 60s, was it Paper Mache Dream Balloon or whatever it was?
Look, OK Go are a really good example of a band that does this sort of stuff, but their vocal and the way that they approach their music, it works. Like, I actually like OK Go. I don't mind listening to OK Go, but they're sort of happy poppy and it works. These guys shouldn't be fucking happy. Like, go and do something to make yourself miserable, mate, because you don't write very good happy songs.
See, I'd always mentally conflated them with the Drones for some reason. I think it might just be because they're a The band. But I'd never, when I listened to this album, I was like, is this right? This doesn't match with my mental picture of what the Shins are about. And maybe he's on some good drugs now. Maybe they've finally put him on some SSRIs or something. And he's got happy, happy, good times going on. And if he does, and if this is a reflection of a better state for him personally, that's lovely. Good. But it fucked your art, bro.
Yeah.
What's important to you? Living, making good art.
I'm scared now that the next Broken Bells album, which is his other project, is going to suck this much because I really like Broken Bells. I like Broken Bells more than these guys. But, man, this was terrible. It was just woeful. There wasn't a redeeming song in the whole album. I'm sorry.
Well, I had no baggage with it and I had no preconceptions with it. So I just appreciated it as a bunch of asinine, meaningless pop songs for which it was pleasant enough, you know, like Hold Music is, but it didn't impact me in any way. I mean, I'm struggling to figure out a song I'd actually like to listen to again, but it wasn't as though it was it wasn't an unpleasant chore to listen to it, but it wasn't in any way enriching. It was literally like, it was like a Milky Way. It was like the cheapest, shittiest chocolate bar you can eat. And the least substantial chocolate bar you can buy.
Look, my hope for this album that was the single was just a single, you know, because bands. Good point. I can't even remember now.
I remember you said the single was shit and you weren't very confident.
Yeah, but it turned out the rest of the album was pretty much indicative. Pretty much the same track. So, I don't know. I sort of feel crap that I burnt a pick on it when I probably should have just given it a once listen to and gone, oh, no, this is terrible. Let's not pick that.
You're allowed to do that, you know. The music will let you do that.
Yeah, I know. Because, yeah, like, I would have only had to have listened to three tracks of this and gone, I see what they're trying to do here and I don't like it.
Yes.
I don't like it.
They're not going to succeed. So what are the Shins supposed to sound like? Because this felt like music for a Zach Braff film. It felt like it was absolutely hitting its target market. If that was its target
market. Yeah, but it's that disassociation between his voice, I feel, suits a melancholy style music a lot better than happy poppy joy joy sort of stuff. It should have a tinge of sadness to it, and this just doesn't. Oh, like, it's not that much. Like, it's a fine line. I don't really think that you would be that into early Shins either, but that fine line crossing between. I used to find this with Elliot Smith a lot too. Like, he's a very similar sort of singer, where I really liked some of his stuff, but when he crossed over into that too sugary, sweet musical style, I hated it.
So it gives you kind of pre-diabetic shivers, doesn't it? Kind of makes you go, oh! And it is almost like you get the tingling, like you've had too much sugar.
Mm.
It's quite interesting how that works. Yeah.
So, like, I'm not saying this is the difference between, you know, it's not like he's gone from Metallica style fucking big guitars to this. It's not that big a jump, but the earlier stuff is a lot more melancholy and
this is pure saccharine. This is just sugar.
It's a little bit like the good example of Chili Peppers, where they went from, you know, like really funky slap bass to almost a parody of slap bass later on. You know, like,
yeah, they lost the funk in a big way, and they were trying to.
Yeah, it was like cheesy funk, you know. And the music's still, like, you can listen to later Chili Peppers and you go, oh, yeah, that's Chili Peppers, but it's not good Chili Peppers.
And if you'd never heard the Chili Peppers before, you could listen to later Chili Peppers and go, oh, that's really cool. And then you listen to the real stuff and go, oh, wait, no, that stuff, that's the pure. This is this is heavily cut with fucking Jif and Ajax. So tell me about... not Kruger and Dorfmeister, but Huber and Dorfmeister, which is your boys Tosca. Couple of Austrian DJs. Oh, have you got more points to make about the
I've just got one more point. I almost beat
it. You've still got the golf club and the pinata isn't quite been cracked open and you still want to have a few hoofs at it. Did you see my photos on the internet this week of the wife was away, so I made a pinata in the shape of a poo emoji. Because you can't polish it.
Did you do that? Yeah. I thought you just found that off the internet.
No. I built that. I made that. And it was three balloons that were kind of made into a triangle. The argument being that you can't polish a turd, but you can paper mache it. Mm. The funny thing is that when I finally revealed to the young bloke that we were going to do a punyata, he was horrified. He said, I don't want to eat out of that. That'll be disgusting. Ugh. So... And he said, Nick, can we just wrap it in Christmas paper or something? He said, okay, we can do that. So I wrapped one half in Christmas paper, and on the other half, brown paper, poo emoji, smile, and all the rest of it. And I hung it up with the Christmas paper side out. And then I put a little bit of torsion on the cord that was hanging it. And I said, hey, name. I won't say his name on the podcast. I let go of it and just swung around, and the poo emoji just started leering at him. And he died laughing. He thought it was the best. Suddenly he thought it was the best idea in the world and suddenly claimed it to his mother, who was there. So we've made a punyata. I was like, you bastard, you sold me out. You said this was a terrible idea. Now you're back on board now that the big reveal's been made.
Well, I almost bezoed this album and I thought, geez, that's pretty bad when it's my own pick.
We're talking about Tosca, which was...
No, I'm talking about...
You're talking about the Shins?
The Shins, yeah.
Did not bezo this album. I listened to it three times.
So Tosca, right, this is not the best example of Tosca's music either.
So this is Huber and Dorfmeister. Pair of Austrians. They do not run a water company that has a pink logo. So don't worry, Formula One, you'll be fine. Your sexuality isn't being questioned here.
If you want to listen to what I think is the best Tosca album, it's JAC, sort of like a black cover with some line art on the front of it. You were talking last week about how you needed music to be in the foreground to really enjoy, get into it.
That's a slight to make it a classic.
Yeah, okay.
To get that classic status, it has to be the frontal sensory experience, not part of something else, not like a movie soundtrack. It's music that contributes to the movie, and the movie is the prime mover in that sensory experience. That's kind of what I was saying. I mean, you can still have good incidental music. You can still have good instrumental music. You can have good ambient. I mean, ambient fucking house wouldn't exist if you couldn't have it on in the background. But it is music to have on in the background while you're doing something else.
Yeah, so this Tosca and this style of music is a band that I almost need to listen to in the background. I need to sort of have it on in the background and it sort of seeps into my subconscious. And that's how I enjoy it. Like, and I sort of feel my... After a while, I'm sort of like, oh, I really like that beat. You know, like it doesn't sort of hit me up front. The enjoyment of the music comes a lot more slowly and a lot more on a background level.
And it's one track of 50 minutes an hour long rather than...
Yeah.
You couldn't pull tracks apart if you were asked to.
No. And this is okay. It's not a great album. It's an okay example of what they can do, but it's not a great one. I'm sort of just like, meh. On this one,
it feels like from the genre that they're described to be in. I mean, I even read the bio information on Spotify, and they said another mercurial set of house, ambient, and funk informed instrumentals. They're like, yeah, that's the description you could use for it. Paid by numbers, that's what it is. Funk informed was an interesting adjective, though.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'd go that far, but...
Well,
yeah,
the drums are. They've got that kind of 60s, that particular kind of 70s funk drum. And a little bit of a waka waka guitar.
If I wasn't sort of being compelled to listen to this for the podcast, I would have put this on and gone... I do feel like this music, and I'm going to go back and listen to JAC because JAC is a way better version of this style of music. It's a lot tighter. It's a lot they just make that mood happen a lot better. This was a bit washed out, like a little bit like, you know, they just bashed it together on a Saturday afternoon because they were, you know, smoking some good pot, but
or in between other side projects, because of course
they're possibly
always working on other side projects.
Yeah, like these guys would be producing stuff for heaps of other people, I would imagine. So, I did not like it. I just didn't think it was the best example
of their
stuff.
There wasn't anything obnoxious about it, and it was quite, you know, I think enjoyed it is a bit generous, but it was, I mean, I was more than happy to listen to it three times. So. Mm.
Well, the thing is, if you're doing something, like if you're working or...
It was perfect for putting on in the background and working. It's exactly what it is. But you get to the end of the... I mean, the album runs for like an hour and eight, I think I looked it up. I was like,
yeah.
I've been through that. I can't remember anything that happened.
Anything about it. Yeah. I've got a Spotify playlist, like one of their playlists, which is like, I think it's called Deep Focus or something. And it's like a, you know, like an even sort of more intense version of this. And if I've got some sort of heavy brain intensive work to do sitting in front of a computer, it's my go-to list because it's sort of perfect background. It sort of inhabits that part of my brain that needs to listen to some music and concentrate on that sort of thing in the background while the rest of my brain gets on with actually doing some fucking work.
It's just
that
ambient sort of rhythm.
Yeah.
Just going
no,
on.
No vocals.
Level, subliminal, you know, just keeps you going. Each song runs into each other. Yeah, I can see that why that would work. Mm. I'm not expecting there would be a lot of Turbo Negro
no.
on the playlist.
So you sort of explained to me last week why you really liked this stuff. And I as soon as I heard the first track, I was like, oh, yeah, this is, to use a Balls podcast trademark term, this is completely in your wheelhouse. Why is this a great example of this style of music is what I wanted to ask. Because I found after a while it's started to grate on me a little bit until I got to Dude Without a Face, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah,
it's my favorite track on this album.
So Dude Without a Face is actually much more like it's almost much more like death metal. It's and what I love about this album is, it might seem odd to you because you said the whole thing feels like a brick to the face. The whole thing seems like a continuum. There is subtlety of genre and of approach right through the album. They are literally jumping from genre to genre as they roll through. It's, and for a fucking rock nerd like me, it's really cool to see them attacking things that are as odd as glam rock. Like Shake Your Shit Machine is the most glam rock song I've heard anyone crank out short of the fucking 70s. Through to Dude Without a Face, which is completely kind of Scandinavian death metal. It's the spread of genre is really cool. The place where it came from, that it's a bunch of old dudes getting together expendable style for one last crack at the title, I really like. And just riffs, man.
Yeah, riffs. It does have cool riffs.
I just fucking love riffs.
I
listened to it again today in the kitchen thinking, right, hate this album. Come up with a reason to hate this album. And within about 30 seconds, I'm fucking air guitaring in the kitchen. So I don't have a logical, rational argument for why I like this album. I just fucking love riffs.
Mm. It's got a lot of riffs. And I think that's the thing. This is where, you know, how we're talking about my ignorance last week of rock music.
No, we're just talking about your ignorance in general.
In general, that's true. But that's where it probably pays against me is I'm not picking up those subtleties that make it, you know, that lift it beyond just a sort of rock album.
Yeah.
You know, all I'm hearing is the riffs. You know, I'm not going, oh, fuck, that's clever. And sort of coming into it from an intellectual standpoint as well as a musical one. So
yeah, I do like an album that can make me think, oh, this actually, really cool what they did there, as well as throwing the fucking horns and just banging the head. Because if you can do both of those, you've got me. But I actually made, I mean, there was this glam rock, there's sort of flick knife wielding garage punk, there's kind of melodic emo metal, there's some absolute cheesy fucking 80s poodle rock that the darkness would be embarrassed by, as nihilistic metal, doom thrash, unapologetic cock rock that even Angus and Axel would throw the horns to. Actually, this album's kind of the best case scenario for what AC/DC are doing with Axl Rose, because this Axl Rose in front of AC/DC shouldn't work, and they're going to come back long after their best and put an album out. It might, if it could work anywhere near as well as this album, they would have done a good job, I feel.
Yep.
But I think the key point of this is
I love the story, actually. I went and looked it up on Wikipedia after you told me the story. It's just nuts, that story.
Literally the fucking the fat dude from the band who used to support them on their. It's being an older dude with a beard. I think that's just awesome. You know, that's just awesome the way it works out. And then you could be a like the world famous in Norway. That part of it really tickles me too, that you could suddenly be the biggest celebrity in an entire country just by being the guest singer for this rock band. It's just, it's really quite cool.
Yep.
But I also love the lyrics on this album. I love the way that, like, the, and it was always quite funny the way that a band that obviously the primary language is Norwegian, but they always came up with fantastic lyrics in English. And the farewell line on the second track, Hello Darkness, you cannot fuck with this. It's unfuckable with. It's just so, it kind of summates the ridiculousness and yet the sense of purpose that the album has. And that's why I've always loved music that takes the piss out of itself, but is still yet dead serious about what it's doing.
Yeah.
And I'd say if you don't have time to listen to this whole album, take the last minute of the Nihilistic Army, which is like track 4. Which is all about just being a nihilistic meat-headed dickhead in a nihilistic meat-headed rock band. And it's self-parodying, but it's also dead serious about that in the same place, to the point where it's like there's a voice off stage saying, why don't you just go and buy a self-help book? And the response is, I can't read! And it's kind of... it's like, why don't you just go and slash your wrists? I don't bleed! It's just... ridiculous and awesome at the same time, which is basically everything that my Twitter personality and my real personality aspires to. So that's the story of Turbo Negro Sexual Harassment. It's unwoke as Sleeping Beauty, but it's still ridiculously funny.
So can you redeem my very poor last week of new music with some interesting new tunes?
Let's talk about some other stuff that's happened in tunes. Now, I understand that rap music's saviour, the Drizzy Drake, the Audrey, has tried to drag grime into the foreground of American hip-hop. He's co-opted Skepta and friends to inform the musicality of his new album, This Life? No, More Life? This Life was a sitcom from the 90s.
So, hang on, I'm going to check this. Has he stolen the aesthetic drink
not just stolen grime? He has Skepta, I think he has Skepta guesting on it.
No, I'm just having a look now. He has Young Thug, has Kanye, 2 Chainz, Travis Scott. No, I can't see any grime guys.
No, he's got some link up with Skepta. I think there was one track that was written by Skepta or was a tribute.
It must have been written by, because there's no guest things on the
Skepta
Spotify
Instrumental
list.
Instrumental or something, I think. But he went on tour with
Skepta. Skepta Interlude, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they're really tight. And a lot of the discussion I see that, because NBA Twitter has a Venn diagram that intersects with black dudes talking about hip-hop Twitter, which is good because it means that I can have opinions about these things without actually having to listen to the fucking album, which is much appreciated. But there's an understanding that some of that audience is saying, oh, cool, we can, you know, this is actually really cool, this stuff that's going on in this grime stuff that's going on in Britain. And there's half of them going, this is shit, why the fuck are we listening to the British playing American music? Because that's what hip-hop is.
I find it weird, and I realize this is my own personal taste, but how really smart Americans can be so fucking wrong about music, because a lot of the stuff they listen to is abject fucking shit. I'm sorry, America, but your tastes are up your asshole. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
I don't think that's the opposite argument is defensible, given who they voted for president.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. Like, you get normal, rational, intelligent people that should be able to break this stuff down, and they're like, oh, Kanye West is the best artist since fucking, I don't know, Michael Jackson. Anyway.
Well.
So,
are you going to be that kind of artist? That's a different question. Is he good at writing pop songs? Is what he is doing writing pop songs? And is he good at it? Because that's a different question from is he making good music?
I guess this comes back to the fact that, yeah, I guess he is good at writing pop songs because
that's what Michael Jackson was good at. He was very
good
at it.
What he does is popular music. But see, I don't really like Michael Jackson, but I can admit that some of the stuff was well written.
Oh, yeah, it was well written, and it was pervasive, but that was also because it was a different media environment. You couldn't avoid a Michael Jackson. We've had this discussion before. You couldn't avoid a new Michael Jackson song, whereas you can avoid. I've never heard anything of The Life of Pablo. Is that his album?
Yeah.
I didn't hear anything off, fucking Songs from the Six, or whatever it was called, the last Drake album. I'll never hear anything off this new Drake album because I won't need to. I won't be able to avoid your Beyoncés and your Iggy's and all that sort of stuff because that'll end up getting played in shops.
Because you walk through shopping malls, yeah.
Yeah, because I have to go to the shop to buy things. But you know, I have to sit in the fucking dentist waiting room where they've got shitty hits 100 something on, and they'll be playing "Here's to My Eggs" again. But that's, yeah, they're not going to be playing Drizzy Drake.
Yeah. No, because he's a little too un-PC, I guess.
I don't know. He's the most milquetoast fucking hip-hop artist I've ever heard of, though.
Oh, yeah, and that is one of my main problems with Kanye is that a lot of his beats are just appropriated. Like they're not even well appropriated. He's fucking using stuff that's just popular because it's got a good hook already. Like, and he's not trying to hide it. He's not trying to, you know, there's nothing,
it's blatantly
nothing clever
obvious,
about
ungarnished 70s pop songs.
Hmm.
There is no inventive step in turning that into a rap. Sorry, turning that into a rap song.
So you're telling me you're not picking Drake this week? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not picking the Drizzy Drake. The More Life. There will be no More Life.
What are you picking? What are something we picking? Something with guitars?
Look, would it be out of character to do that? This is the part where I turn back a page.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're flicking through your very analog notebook. Right,
yeah, I believe in analog.
I'll have to put in a page flicking sound effect there. Go real true hoop.
No, what you need is one of those fucking. Do you remember those audio books you used to get when you were in primary school? Now it's time to turn the page. You need that fucking chime for the turning the page.
I'll have to see if I can find that. Now let's turn the page.
Ding. Right, we're on the page that has the album picks, and I'm picking on the basis of narrative, not in terms of the band's narrative, just bands that have a narrative. In their band name. I'm picking because you did so well picking songs, albums from bands that already existed, hoping that they would be good. They both turned out to be shit. I'm going to pick bands I've never fucking heard of.
Well,
and hoping like hell they turn out all right. The first band I would like you to listen to is a band from Sweden called Satan Takes a Holiday.
Oh, that'll be good.
And the second band I would like you to listen to is a band from Leeds called Pulled Apart by Horses. I'm presuming that's not what Satan did on his holiday.
Just for everyone playing at home, the Satan Takes a Holiday's album is called Aliens.
Yes, it is.
And that is in the playlist. And what was the other one called?
The other one was called Pulled Apart by Horses.
Pulled Apart by Horses. Well, that sounds like fun. And their album is called The Haze.
I expect fair enough. The truth.
Well,
so there are two bands I have never heard of, but they have tracks on my Spotify playlist that sounded pretty good, and I thought that could be fun. So let's roll with that.
Well, I'd never heard of Honey Blood or Black Mountain before last year, and that turned out all right, so...
Roll the fucking dice and see what happens. And there were lots of other, quite a few others that were quite interesting. I have a few too many at the moment. I was going to toss one your way that you might be interested in. This is a free suggestion. Have you got Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears in your Discovery Weekly?
No, I do not.
Well, I've had him. It's very kind of old school soul funk kind of act that I think that you would like the sound of, and I almost picked it for this week, but I thought I might just throw it in as a bonus effort. If you see him, give him a listen, because they sound like they could be good fun.
I've saved the album, so I'll have a look at that one.
Yep.
So in my Twitter feed this week, it popped up that another album called Better Living Through Chemistry, but not by not the one we reviewed a couple of weeks ago, turned 20 this week, which is Fatboy Slim. That guy kicks ass.
Was it? I thought that was a Chemical Brothers album.
No, Better Living Through Chemistry was Fatboy Slim's first album. Obviously not the one that really broke, but was his introduction. So I was like, I think I might pick a Fatboy Slim album this week, because I do like Fatboy Slim. And I went back
and... fucking in heaven.
I went back and listened to like his big release, and the fact
Gutter
that...
Gutter and the Stars?
No. It's that was the one after. Fucking my memory is just terrible.
You've come a long way, baby?
Yeah, come a long way, baby.
With a fat dude on the front.
Yep. The problem is that those songs have been used so much in Sports Tonight, like Vodafone everywhere.
Commercials.
Yeah, everywhere. It's just it's very hard to look at that album objectively. I went back and listened to the album, and it's like, I didn't really enjoy it that much. And so if I can't enjoy it, I can't pick it as a classic.
If I listen to it again, I would enjoy it as a trigger for a bunch of memories, but not necessarily as a piece of music.
Yeah, see,
it'd
problem
be like
was
looking
that...
through an old photo album and going, oh, fuck, I remember the time that, you know, that mom, like I had a mate who was directing a dance routine in the Med Review, and they did a routine to Praise You, and it was like, yeah, that was a great night. We went out and got fucking smashed and all the rest of it. Memory triggers, not actually relevant to the music itself.
Yeah, see, I think the music has been used so much in other places now that I've had all those triggers washed out of me a bit.
You're saying you're thoroughly washed?
I am washed. So I'm going to pick another album from 2001, which I have talked about quite a bit on the podcast. Not exactly the same sort of big beat genre, but around that sort of electronic music vibe that was happening in the late 90s, early 2000s, and that's...
The Wiggles' Big Red Car.
Goodbye Country, Hello Nightclub by Groove Armada. Yep, great album. Really love it. Saw them tour this live. I saw them twice live, actually, and both... They're an amazing live band. Unless I just managed to catch them, you know, lightning in a bottle, and see them at two really good live shows, they were a kick-ass live band, which is
so
not
something...
So if you
watched Groove Armada and thought they were shit, please at Bezo and explain to him how he is wrong.
Yeah, because they're essentially a band that wrote their albums, two guys writing albums on a laptop. You know, that's how they wrote their music. So you would not think that they would translate to a live show that
well. I
bet
they wrote them on a desktop.
Possibly, but they...
Big ol' iMac.
They definitely traveled with, four whatever MacBook Pros were back then. But they also had a massive big percussion section and a drummer with a drum kit that Metallica would have been jealous of.
And the trumpet player for...
trombone, yeah.
Yeah, for that track that I always forget the name of.
At the River.
At the River, that's the one. If you're fond of Sandu, the fringe Australian quick bowler.
Which is actually...
Brenda Sandu.
from the album before, which was from Vertigo, which is a close second. I like the overall sort of flow of Goodbye Country a little bit better than Vertigo, but Vertigo had At the River End, I See You Baby.
Which one had Purple Haze?
That was the one after.
Well, I already hate this album.
Love Box. Purple Haze was the opening track off the next album, 2002's Love Box.
Because that had a bass riff that rivaled Bug Powder Dust in my estimation.
I think Love Box had some really absolute fucking kick-ass songs, but their sort of 7th, 8th, 9th best song on that album were pretty fucking weak.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising. It only came out like a couple of years. It came out pretty quickly after Goodbye Country. They sort of...
Would have spent a lot of time on tour in that time and not a lot of time in the computer room with the iMac.
And the funny thing was, we went to that festival. I suppose it was a festival to see Jamiroquai. That's who we went to see because I thought Jamiroquai would be really good live.
How Generation X could you be?
And he was terrible live. He was woeful.
It's funny how we say he was terrible. He's not Jamiroquai. The band is Jamiroquai. His name is something else. His name is like JK or something.
Yeah.
We always think like him, the twat in the hat. Is not Jamiroquai. The band is Jamiroquai.
His band was fucking terrible too.
I mean, he's a twat and his band's a twat. Mm. His bands are a plural twat.
They were...
Big car head though, JK. It's funny how musicians are often big car heads. Nick Mason wrote off... He's owned a McLaren F1 road car, but the GTR, like the special sports version they built for Le Mans, he's owned it as new... from like 1995, but at the Goodwood members meeting, he fucking smashed it into a tire wall. $3.7 million worth of car, irreplaceable fucking thing. So that's going to be good times to put it back together again. Serves you right for producing shit music, you Pink Floyd tosser.
Well,
that's the thing you can say that was so bad about that Tosca album. Some of it sounded like Pink Floyd.
The thing was that festival really flipped the script because I expected Jamiroquai to be this sort of a little like Jamiroquai is a little bit paint by the numbers music on the album, and I thought, oh, but live, you know, they're going to have a big band to reproduce that sound, and if you've got a big band, how could you not have like a really kick ass live sound? That was what I'd sort of bought tickets on the assumption of.
And he was like, let me show you how that could be realised.
And then Groover Mark
pressing play on this laptop and phoning in my performance.
Well, but they had the big band, but it was like, essentially you could have recorded the set and put it on a CD and done a bit of Pro Tools on it and just released it as an album. Like it was like they were running through a studio session.
Yeah. The future's made of virtual insanity though.
And Groove Armada was the opposite. I was like, well, you know, what sort of live show can two guys with a laptop do?
How the fuck are they going to pull this off?
And they were just fucking insanely good. Like, and they had obviously put... The thing I really appreciated with both the shows I saw was they were very conscious of the fact that they were two guys with a laptop and that people had paid to see a live show and they were going to fucking put on a live show. And I've heard Chemical Brothers are a lot like, I can't believe I haven't seen Chemical Brothers live.
And
I've heard Chemical Brothers are a lot.
You're too old to go out without your children now. Maybe if they make a comeback when your kids are old enough to actually go to festivals. If there are still festivals in 2025.
That's the fucking problem is now they're too old to fucking come out and do an actual venue show.
Winery tour.
Chemical Brothers fucking turning up to 13 on the amp for a winery tour. I don't know whether that'll work.
Wouldn't that be fucking awesome though? You're at Serenade.
Oh, yeah. It'd be awesome
off
for
your
me.
Nana, with your hip replacement. Throwing
it'd be awesome
shapes.
For me. Oh dear. Anyway, that's my classic talk
time,
and I'm
time
sticking
comes
to
for
it.
Us all. So we have Groove Armada, we have Satan Needs a Holiday. Satan takes a holiday.
He needs a holiday.
Satan books a holiday on Expedia. We should have got some tie-in for this. And pulled apart by horses. So narrative.
As Burmo said in his little email today, three nights in Sydney on Airbnb is more expensive than a flight to Japan. So
go to Japan. It's full of Japanese people. They're interesting looking. They smoke it's a bit.
Fuck more interesting than Sydney, that's for sure.
I like Sydney. I've always liked Sydney. I'm of Sydney. I spent 4 years in Sydney. My dad is from Sydney. I have family in Sydney. I could not afford to live there, and I would not recommend that anybody else does.
I've slagged off Victoria and Sydney today. I probably should leave WA alone.
At least Sydney know that a potato scallop is a potato scallop.
A scallop, yeah. Not a fucking cake. No. Jesus Christ. People, what are you talking about?
I think they're talking about... In reality, what we're talking about is two different fucking foodstuffs entirely. Potato cake is something that's made out of mashed potato. A scallop is a sliced arrangement. But that seems to be lost in the nuance of Twitter debate. But I think the only solution is to ban Victorians from talking about food or even eating.
Just ban Victorians. Just ban Victorians. It's a lot easier.
Yeah. Southeast Queensland would be a lot quieter.
Lock them up in an AFL stadium and let them go to it. All right, Doc. Pleasure doing business with you.
Was it?
It was.
Was it really? I'm drinking Corona. That's how low.
Wow. Wow, that is the revelation of the night. You must be fucking hard up.
I was thirsty. No, they were like, they were $4 for $8. See, the local supermarket, and our friends from Drive Through Pod have pioneered this. If you go to Countdown Supermarkets, which are the equivalent of Woolworths, often they'll have loose end beers that they kind of lash together and charge $8 for four. And sometimes you get real like beers that are much more than that. By the price, you know, if you try to buy a six pack of Corona, they'll be $26 or something. But obviously, if you get 4 for $8, you're doing much better. So I picked one up with Corona, and I'm wondering why I did that. But
I like Corona, but then that's me.
No lemon in it. I don't have any citrus to add to it.
All right, Doc. I'll catch you on the flip side.
Hasta mañana.